This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Kiana is cool to talk to, making her debut. We got another one making her debut, Kiana Smith from Louisville, next hour. And, of course, the Louisville women's program is a rolling.
Yep.
They are balling.
And if you missed our visit yesterday with ACC legend Charles Scott, we will show that to you about 8:30 this morning. But top of the hour, let's take this thing to Connecticut. You know, we talked last night about road wins and critical road wins and things of that nature. Packer reminds me of a day in the ACC when, you know, Steve Forbes almost did this last night. He almost got that win at Duke last night, didn't he?
Close.
But I tell you what now, kids, let's get in the Wayback Machine here for a minute, shall we? Let's roll the videotape. Let's go back. Let's go back a few years. Maybe more than he wants to admit. Seth Greenberg, you won at Duke. You know what this is like, right? Oh, looky here now. Roll the video. What's going on here? This is just winning right here, Seth. That's all this is winning.
That's Jermon Gordon and Deron Washington making a heck of a play. That's an overtime win. You don't get an overtime win at Duke very often, I can tell you that much. Funny things happen at the end of those games.
Yeah.
But I had great guards. You know, Xavier Nadell and Jermon Gordon could make plays. Deron Washington could make plays. Eddie Bisaya could make plays. I had some guys that could make plays.
Hey, Paulus, they barely just let him back in the building. He was sitting on the baseline last night. It's the first time he's been back since he lost to Virginia Tech.
Yeah, his career kind of hit a roadblock after that game, if you know what I mean. I mean, it was just one of those things that someone had to, you know, be the fall guy. I mean, how can you lose to Virginia Tech? Why is Virginia Tech even in the league? I mean, when we went into the league, there were a number of coaches that said, wait, why are they in the league? They can't win. They're going to kill the league. Then we won all those games, and it made the league look bad. But they've recovered, and now Virginia Tech's playing really well and has as good an atmosphere as anyone in college basketball.
Oh, well, and Packers said at the top, Hokie's going to run. We got to get Greenberg back on this show. I want to
start. It's unbelievable. I go weeks at a time without getting on the show. You must have big-time guests.
No, well, we do, but it's all about timing, Seth. and who better to talk about the Red Hot Hokies than you? I mean, they've won six straight, first time ever, they've won six straight ACC games. And, you know, this is a team that we thought was going to be really good before the season. Mm. And then they went through kind of a funky six-week period where you're like, man, I'm not sure what's going to happen here. And now, all of a sudden, ever since old Mr. Moore made that half-court shot, they've took that personally, and they've been on a run. Now, they get North Carolina this weekend. You mentioned the environment. I thought it was awesome against Virginia. I thought they got after the Hoos defensively. But this team is playing with supreme confidence.
Yeah, I think the schedule's set up for them. You know, Pack, I mean, a lot of things, who you play, when you play, where you play them, in terms of gaining confidence. They had Pitt twice. They had some Georgia Tech. They had some of the bottom leaguers. And what they're now doing is right. They're defending better, defending with more of a purpose. I thought that the game against Virginia was a physical game, but a clean game. I thought that they got the stops that they needed to get. And then offensively, their execution has been terrific. And when Kevin plays well, when Mutz plays well, and then I think, you know, Storms played better. You know, he's picking his spots. I think Padula is a guy that gives him a better on-ball defender, a little bit bigger guard. Lean has been good. So they're playing their very best ball at the right time of the year, and they're playing against the Carolina team that when you punch them in the face, sometimes they don't respond. That will be a great environment for that game and a big game because I think they're right. They're literally right at the edge. You know, I think that's the thing. They're right at that edge. Obviously, they have the one bad loss. They don't have a ton of bad losses, really. But they, you know, getting a win against North Carolina, getting another quad one win. This time of the year, you got to eliminate those quad two and three losses, and you got to find ways to, if you can get. You don't have a lot of opportunities in the ACC. But if you can get a quad one win, you've got to put your arms around it.
Seth, I want to go back to Wake Forest last night. We've all talked about what a remarkable job Steve has done in year two in Winston-Salem. But last night, the miss at Duke, the chance to not win that ball game, I mean, we all know the momentum they've built with this year, but I'm curious as to how that's going to convert when the committee gets in that room. Because
yeah.
Are you concerned? Because I'm starting to get a little concerned about just where they fit in the tournament.
I think they can't have a bad loss. I mean, I think it's real simple right now. Down the stretch, they can't lose in the open round of the tournament. They can't have that bad loss, that loss that knocks you out of the tournament. Because the resume isn't overwhelming, but they have a lot of wins. So we always joke about it, but I've been in that situation. And, you know, you don't want to leave it to the committee. Now, that game was a heck of a game. I mean, the only field goal that Duke makes in the last 4 minutes and 3 minutes and 58 seconds, is that tap-in. I mean, Wake Forest had an opportunity. They fought their way back in the game. They got the stops they needed to get. They got out in transition. Duke looked unorganized, quite honestly, offensively. Walt made big shots. Alondis Williams, the second half, had 15 points. They came up with 50-50 balls. Laravia has been terrific down the stretch. But you got to close it out. And that was a really tough way to not have a chance to win the game. And, give Duke credit for getting to the offensive glass. But it goes back to my same thing about Duke. And you guys, it's a broken record. Their shot selection the last 4 minutes of the game was horrific. Their execution the last 4 minutes of the game was horrific. Paolo Banchero, 2 for 10 again. Now, he got to the lane. He just didn't finish. Mm-hmm. They got to clean that up if they're going to win the national championship. They're going to clean that up if they're going to get to the Final Four. They were good defensively most of the game. They've been very, very good on the ball. But at the end of that game, the last 4 minutes of that game, some of the shots and understanding of time and score was not good.
I'm going to allow you to change your mind after this answer, okay? Mm. So keep that in mind before you answer. Mm. But as we sit here on February the 16th, for a gentleman that has won the ACC Coach of the Year Award, who would you give it to this year? Is it a Mike Bray because they're tied right now for first, or really a half game back? Mm. Or is it the Jim Larrañaga, Steve Forbes preseason pick 12th and 13th, and here they are in the upper third, if you will? I'm just curious where you would go, Seth, today for the ACC Coach of the Year.
My gut feeling right now in this moment of time, it's between Forbes and Mike Bray. I look at what Mike's done. I think the hardest thing to do in coaching is when your program's going in the wrong direction, regaining momentum. It really is. Momentum's hard to gain. It's easy to lose. It's almost impossible to regain. And what Mike's been able to do, especially with the start they got off to, and to keep his team moving forward, to keep his team defending, to keep his team doing the things that they needed to do to kind of have that return on investment, as he calls it. Mm-hmm. I would say Mike Bray right now, slightly over Forbesy.
And Jim Larrañaga? I mean, they were picked.
Yeah, Jim's for sure in the conversation, and he, there's no doubt about it. Jim's got to be in the conversation. I mean, reinventing their team in terms of going to the four guards, Waterberg's development, Charlie Moore's addition.
Yeah,
Jim's got to be in the conversation. I just think that the start that Mike got off to was so detrimental to keeping your team moving in the right direction.
Right.
That's the hardest thing to do in coaching is to, when your team has disappointment, get them to the next play, get them to continue to come into practice with a mindset of getting better, having them understand the season's a journey, not a destination. And hey, let's face it. I mean, that Kentucky one obviously flipped the switch and gave them belief, but Paul Atkinson's addition, obviously Blake Wesley's addition, and then getting those seniors to believe that they can win after struggling at the start of the season, that's hard because in the last 2 years, they hit that mark and they couldn't get over the top of it. So I think it's going to be a tight race. I think Mike Young, it could be in the conversation before it's over.
That's a really good point. All right, that brings me to kind of where we are. Now, we know Lunardi has got the inside, cheat codes to everything about the committee. What's your gut feel today for – 5? I mean, is there a chance if Cinderella finds a glass slipper, somebody wins from the outside or the Brooklyn side of the standings, as Packer calls it, that means somebody who was in is out and that team goes in, right? So 5 is the ceiling in your mind for the ACC.
Yeah, I do. I think 5 is the ceiling. I think that You know, Virginia has those two bad losses. They usually would work against you. You know, analytically, you watch them play, they can't score. I don't think they work their way into the conversation unless they win the conference tournament.
Okay.
I think Virginia Tech is in position to be the fifth team. I think Duke, Notre Dame, Miami, North Carolina, Wake Forest, if Virginia Tech hops up, I think that that is going to impact potentially Wake Forest. It could. But I don't see more than five getting in. If you look at the bottom of the league, the bottom of the league has been so dismal. Right. If you look at the work the league did in the preseason, and look, it's not easy for me to say it. The league obviously has an incredibly rich tradition. Mm-hmm. But I joke. I say it's like the Fed in the Post. You got to do your work early. The league didn't do its work early. And there are too many teams that are getting wins through the schedule. But those wins aren't against the field. Those wins aren't, quad one wins. I mean, some of them aren't even quad two wins. So I can't imagine a scenario where the league gets more than five teams.
Yeah, I think you're
probably – and that's up because at one point I thought they'd only get four.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I tell you what, Seth, I would take five right now, not ask any questions. Like, hey, whatever the five are, take them. But I would take five now and say, you know what, I'm good. You know, now let's roll the ball out of the 68 and see who goes going to win the national championship. But I think you're right. Unless, the other thing, too, that you just don't know when you try to answer that question is you better root for chalk around the country. You better make sure that all of a sudden you don't have six or seven guys that are fringers. Like, what Virginia Tech is right now, or Virginia under this argument, goes ahead and wins their respective conference championships because they're taking spots. And the ACC is loaded in that 9, 10, 11, and 12 seed right now. And, man, you are walking a fine line if there's upsets around the country come tournament time.
No doubt about it. I remember one year Georgia won the SEC. Utah State won the Mountain West. And that took two bids away. Mm-hmm. Just the way it is. And let's face it, the Big Ten is going to get seven. The SEC is going to get seven. The Big 12 is going to get six or seven. Well, all of a sudden, there's 18 at-large bids right there.
Right.
The PAC is going to, is a bonus because I think the PAC at most gets four. But there are some mid-majors, like the Mountain West could get three or four. The West Coast Conference will get three.
Yeah.
And deserving teams. The league, you got to take care of it. You got to do your work in the non-conference, and the league has it. And then I'll tell you one thing, also the recent history. The league, look what the league did last year in the NCAA tournament opening round, field of 64. It struggled in field of 64. So, I said it on our game day show. I think the league's a little bit at a crossroads. The league, got to continue to recruit, got to continue to use the resources that schools in the league have, whether it's NIL, whether it's transfer portal, whether whatever it is. You've got to work within the times of what we're living in. And what we're living in is you've got to use all the resources available to you to recruit.
100% right.
Great to see you. Sounds like you got a busy morning going there in Connecticut, so we wish you the best.
Miss Amelia's here for a couple more weeks. They just bought a new house and they're fixing it up and getting their plumbing right. So we've got company. She'll be here breaking down some film in a short while and making sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to do.
Always important.
It's mass chaos. Right.
It's always important to get the plumbing.
You got to get the plumbing right.
When you have a 1 year old, cold and hot water and plumbing. Yeah. Oh, she's right over there. What are you doing over there, troublemaker?
Well, come on, let's go. Let's go. Come on, let's get some airtime. Come here. Look at this.
Amelia.
Well, look at Mad Grandpa.
Oh, she's not coming.
Mad
she's
Grandpa, coming. Boy, that's a good look.
Come here, kid.
Hey, Ella, bring her in here.
That's like yelling at Lucius time. Harris there back in the day at Long Beach State. Lucius, get in the post.
I never yelled at Lucius Harris because he made all the shots.
There
you go.
Come on.
What are you doing? Say hello.
Good morning.
What do you think, Amelia?
No.
Good morning,
chance.
Huh? No?
No chance.
She's too busy. She's it's not even juice. I don't, what is this, Ella? It's a vegetable. It's really, let's put it this way, Pack, even if you're hungry, you're not eating this.
I'll tell you what. I'll eat it right after that steak.
Oh,
which, by the way, is really beginning to age. New York for the ACC. Yeah. Hey, what? I hear you guys are coming into New York for the ACC.
Yeah.
Hey, I'd be glad to take you to dinner Thursday night. Oh, you don't get in in time.
I do,
oh,
Seth. Oh. You can take me. I'll get there early.
How about if I call SiriusXM and say, guess what?
Brooks.
I'm going to walk. I'm going to pass on that Thursday night show. I'm going to go to New York early and get that Peter Luger's party of six.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
You come into New York Thursday. Fonz and I are driving in after morning wraps. And somewhere in Brooklyn, we'll grab a quick bite. But you know what?
Bite.
You're not going to give up that. Hey, you're not giving up that XM radio check.
Hey, big man, ain't no quick meal out of this. There's going to be no quick. It's going to be a five courser.
You're not giving up that. You're not giving up that XM radio check.
They got to pay me anyhow. It's like America's ultimate
deal.
Wait
a second. Now you're going
to
get
every American workers to be suspended with pay. They're going to pay me anyhow, whether I'm there or not.
Greenberg, you're getting ready to get Packard and not do a Thursday show to come eat a meal at your cost. This could be groundbreaking.
I actually think we should get a camera on it. And then you know what? If we put it on a camera, we can have Brooksy pay for it.
No. I want to see you reach into your pocket. I want you reaching in for the gold card.
This is all about Lon Kruger and Kermit Davis, and they have no idea.
I love it.
Great to see you. Be well. Have a good
day, guys,
Amelia.
Be well.
All right. See you later.
Bye.
That was awesome. Seth Greenberg.
Beauty. I tell you what. I know we talk ACC exclusively here. But I thought last night in college basketball, across the board, was just a perfect appetizer for what's coming.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
That to have the honor and the privilege of standing here to represent this group of champions is the highlight of my life. We had to go through the toughest conference in the country, and we had to beat in the championship game of the ACC what I think is one of the great college basketball teams of all time. That's Maryland. In my personal opinion.
Even as NC State celebrated their 1974 national championship, it was their ACC championship, not just their own greatness, but the greatness of the team they had to beat, that remained etched in the mind.
And North Carolina State has defeated Maryland in what I think is a historic final.
That game not only was the best basketball game I ever saw, it changed college basketball forever.
In 1974, NCAA rules still allowed only one team from any conference to play in the NCAA tournament. Since the ACC champion was determined by its tournament, no runner-up, even one as deserving as the 74 Maryland Terrapins, could ever go to the NCAAs.
The idea of a team as good as Maryland staying home was such an obvious offense to the college basketball gods that the NCAA said, we've got to make a change.
The NCAA expanded the field for its 1975 tournament from 25 to 32, and most importantly for the ACC, announced that any conference could have a second team receive a bid.
And they called expanding the NCAA the Maryland rule, because we were probably the second best team in the country, and we didn't even get to go.
Another 9 o'clock Monday night, episodes 5 and 6 of the tournament documentary presented by New York Life exclusively here on ACC Network.
You know, before this thing debuted on ACC Network, me and you, mm-hmm. on this show said, what is about to happen on our network is must-watch television.
Right.
If you're an ACC basketball fan, I don't care what team you root for, and even if you're not an ACC fan, this was a documentary
sure.
that you must watch. It's fantastic, and it's even better than anticipated.
Right.
I mean, we knew it was going to be spectacular. John Dahl and that staff, mm-hmm. incredible work. They do it for everything, but this one was going to be special, and it has been phenomenal.
It it reminds you of the historical pieces of ACC basketball that have impacted the landscape of what you now know as the Field of 68. Whether it's the shot clock, whether it's the three-point line, the expansion of the field, you know, the competitive nature. By the way, when you got sent west back in the old days, you got sent west.
That's right.
I mean, like in 1981, North Carolina lost to Indiana in a national championship game, and they came out of the west bracket, like Ogden, Utah, Salt Lake City, or UTEP. I mean, I can't remember where they played, but they were out west. NC State, 83, out west, right? Those are the kinds of things that the NCAA tournament started, but the ACC got involved in some of this, and the impact of the expansion of the tournament from 28, 32, whatever it was, to whatever it became, is directly related to the 1974 ACC championship game.
Right, and you know, there's always points in time, Wes, where there's a transition in college athletics. This was one of them.
Yep.
Much like we are experiencing now, with name, image, and likeness, the transfer portal, and all the other stuff that we've talked about nonstop, it seems like, for the last 2 years, and how different college athletics is today than it was 2.5 years ago. It's almost as if it's a completely different sport. But yeah, going to yesteryear, that moment of the ACC tournament in 74, the greatness of that game and what it meant to the loser, it did change the scope and the course of college basketball forever. Yeah. One of those hyperbole nonsense things. No, that is the truth.
It brings us to kind of where we are right now. And Seth Greenberg, if you just missed it, was with us. And we talk about the ceiling for the ACC in terms of teams going to the tournament. The ceiling looks like 5. And Joe Lunardi has that in his bracketology. And the net kind of reflects some of that this morning. Here's the updated net after last night. Duke is 11. Virginia Tech is 35. North Carolina 37. Can you see the collision course there?
Well, not only that, but I believe, if I'm not mistaken, from a quad one standpoint, which is critical, both Virginia Tech and North Carolina are at 0.
Right.
So somebody's going to get there finally, that golden ticket, if you will, with the win in Castle Coliseum this weekend.
Wake Forest 38. Then there's Notre Dame at 55, Miami 67, and Virginia at 79. Essentially, if you want to take it this way, I got no problem if you do. 7 teams are going to play for 5 spots. Now, we all are going to say Duke is in, so now you're really looking at 6 teams for 4 spots.
Well, the only thing I would proceed with caution with this is that you still, and I thought what Seth said made so much sense, you can't afford a bad loss. We keep talking about what the games you need to win. But there's going to be opportunities for all those teams on that screen to have games that you better win.
Right.
Right. Like, for example, Miami tonight at Louisville. Can't lose that game if you're Miami. I mean, you're not going to get a lot of love if you win it, but, brother, it's a problem if you lose it. And the other thing, too, Wes, and this is the mystery thing, who wins the tournament? That, and not only just the ACC, like I said to Greenberg.
Who wins
around
the other ones?
The country. You got to hope. There's a lot of chalk that somebody's not stealing spots, because when you're walking the high wire act like the ACC is right now, with so many teams at 9 and 10 and 11 on that line, man alive, you just can't have upsets all over the place, and that includes your own tournament.
And you had Indiana lose last night, and that changes things.
No question. Man. So, I mean, it happens every night. That's why it's so much fun to be a college basketball
TCU,
fan now.
Indiana, those type teams, that factors into this.
Literally every night the earth moves. I mean, it changes. And so that's why you got to pay attention to scores around the country and what your team's doing and so forth. So it's a fun time of the year, the next 3 weeks, pressure-packed, and then we get to tournament action, and it's go time.
It's going to be really interesting to see the volatility of college basketball go to the format of the tournament. Because, I mean, it used to be, you know, a little bit like college football. Oh, there are 8 schools that could win the national title. Oh, it's easy double figures this year.
Simple.
Yeah, right?
I'll tell you what, every analyst that I've had on the radio show in the afternoon, and I've been asking this question for about 3 weeks, everyone believes anywhere from 10 to 15, if not more. Like Fran Frischilla the other day said, Pac, it's 15, but you know what? It may be 20.
Wow.
And Fran knows his stuff.
Yeah,
so,
he does.
You know, that everybody who really does follow the sport and absorbs it and gets it believes you got at least a dozen teams that legitimately with a break, gets to New Orleans, and can win it all.
And big picture-wise, by the way, the sports sure could use an exciting 3.5 weeks, couldn't it?
Well, I thought last year was great. And last year felt like it was Gonzaga and Baylor, and those two were over here, and everybody else who could get hot. Well, UCLA did, right, mm-hmm, and sure. made a great run. This year, it just seems like, hey, you can still add Baylor, even though despite the injury over the weekend, and the Zags, they're number one. But there's about another 10 or 15 to go. Guess what? We can win this thing. It's going to be great.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Don't forget, episodes 5 and 6 of the tournament premiere Monday night, 9 o'clock. Episode 5 is 1975 to 1980. Episode 6 is 81 to 83. Wow, how about that? We crossed the halfway point, Pack, on Monday night with the tournament right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app and presented exclusively by New York Life.
It was old Bill McClellan handing out the trophy.
Phil Ford, yeah.
Clemson AD, and Clemson to this day still hasn't won one of those. Said as an alum. I'm not saying that as an ACC Network,
slide the old letter jacket on there, aren't you?
XM employee. No, I'm saying that as an alum.
Yeah.
Been on this earth for a long time. Never, ever saw them win it. I heard that Billy's team hosed the Deeks. I mean, the Deeks hosed the Tigers back in 62 before I was born.
Is that right?
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
But the Tigers got a 0 in the win column winning that trophy. How about that?
I don't know. I have to take that under review.
Ain't nothing to review. That's a fact, Jack.
Tigers got job by Wake Forest.
Billy. Figures.
Billy.
The irony.
Billy's all over the dock, by the way.
I'm kind of getting tired of Billy on that a little bit. I've got to be honest with you. I get enough of that already. I mean, I've really enjoyed the documentary.
Oh, it's been great.
Awesome.
Lots really of Billy. It's good to see Billy.
But not about enough of Billy.
Yeah. Charles Scott joined us yesterday, the legendary North Carolina Tar Heel who broke the color barrier at Carolina when it came to basketball and was one of the forerunners of that in the Atlantic Coast Conference. And we started our visit yesterday talking about the importance of that era with ACC basketball.
I think it's more a critical age of ACC basketball because and in watching the documentary, as I saw and most other people saw, you know, the ACC started out, you know, it really started out as an all-white conference. So mm-hmm. I think the integration of blacks into the conference really changed the dynamics of the conference. And as you said in the documentary, the ACC started out in football and ended up being a great basketball conference. And I think that, of course, the black athletes that played in the conference, not only me, but Phil Ford, Bill Chamberlain, David Thompson, many, Lynn Elmore, all the players that played, I have made a great contribution to the ACC and made the ACC what it is today.
Charles, no one will ever be able to figure out what it feels like to walk in somebody else's shoes. The pressure to play in the ACC is one thing. But given where we were from a societal standpoint, how tough was it mentally for you in terms of the game's one thing, especially when you went on the road, but the mental toughness to get through it, to still concentrate on the game, but yet have to put up with all the nonsense. How difficult is it? How do you describe that to somebody?
Well, I mean, it's hard to describe because you have to be in the situation, I mean, to deal with it. I mean, luckily, and to be honest with you, I had a great support staff in my teammates, Larry Miller, Dick Grubar, Joe Brown, Joe Tuttle, Bill Bunny. I mean, all my teammates, they always had my back, and that made me feel capable of being able to respond to the circumstance I was dealing with. And it was very tough. It was very lonely. I mean, put it that way. It was very lonely because every game I played, there was really only one thing I wanted to do, and that was not mess up, not bring down what was already established as a great North Carolina team. As you know, I came the year after they went to their ACC tournament, went to their first Eastern Regional with Coach Smith and went all the way to the finals, but didn't get to the final game. And so coming back the next year, of course, everyone expected North Carolina to get to the same spot. The only difference was they only changed one player on that team. Bobby Lewis graduated, and I became a starter for the University of North Carolina. So everything that was done at that time was going to be a microcosm of how I fit in with the rest of the players. How did I mix with a team that went to the NCAA Finals the year before? And it was a lot of pressure. Like I said, every game that I played was never a game of enjoyment. It was a game of relief when it was over.
Now we're introducing this story over the last 10, 15, 20 years to a brand new generation of fans. What's the message, do you think, in terms of the experience and the takeaway for what people, young people especially today, can embrace of your journey?
Well, I mean, I think that first of all, it shows how sports are so important to the integration of life itself. I mean, I think some of my teammates, Rusty Clark, I think, and Bill Bunning and Joe Brown, a lot of these guys had never before interacted with a black person. And, mm-hmm. and it wasn't because they were biased or because they were prejudiced. It's just because they lived in the South and there was no circumstance where they were really combining or playing against each other or really having the opportunity to, converse with a black person. I mean, the South was just not in that particular time period where that was being done. Mm-hmm. I was the first black that a lot of the players on the team had an opportunity to really understand and really see that there was really no difference in personality, character, or circumstance between us. And I think that permeated throughout the team and really the players really grew as I grew in understanding society during that time.
I want to close with this question. I mean, your journey is exclusive to you, just as you said earlier. I think that's a really important statement that no one really knows until they're in those shoes. But your impact on this game and your impact on this league in particular, because, you came at a time and then there was Charlie Davis at Wake Forest, Billy Jones at Maryland, Al Hartley, NC State, and others, right? I don't want to lose sight on other guys that broke the barrier at those particular institutions. But not a conversation goes by in this league that it doesn't go Charles Scott, David Thompson, Michael Jordan, and on and on and on as to the guys who were the foundation of stars in this league. What does that mean to you today?
Well, I mean, it means a great deal, of course, to have been able to accomplish something that really is very historical in a league that is very prestigious as the ACC. I mean, of course, it's something that I look on with pride and feel very good about the accomplishment. I look back and I can feel good about what the University of North Carolina has become after that point in time and to know that I had a hand in making it that way. But to be honest with you, I always give credit to Coach Smith. I mean, Coach Smith just was the person that made me the individual that I am. I mean, I live my life still on accordance to how Coach Smith would feel about what kind of individual I am and what I'm doing. And I know everybody, we say this, and everybody gets upset when we say this, but Carolina is a family. Right. And it's a family that I'm glad to be a part of. And they gave me the opportunity to do something that I never even dreamed that I would have an opportunity to do in life, and that was to make a great contribution to integration.
And I hope that folks are watching this documentary and understand what your road was like to pave it for everybody else, which has made the ACC so great. And if anything comes out of this documentary, I hope people understand it. You know what? Treating people with respect, doesn't matter your color, your skin. Everybody goes through highs and lows. Some hills are a little steeper than others. Got to figure that out. But, man, you are an incredible inspiration. And it's really, really cool having you on the show talking about it. Really, I appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed being on here. And again, you know, and we got to always end this way, you know. And I got to tell you this. My name is Charlie Scott, and I'm a Tar Heel.
Just like they do on the video board, right?
He was great.
Oh, unbelievable.
Man, I really enjoyed having him on. That was an honor.
Yeah, really was. And we hope more to come each and every Tuesday, right? After the doc runs the night before, we hope we can provide you with a legend or two the following day.
Yep. There's enough to pick from, that's for sure.
Holy smokes. I mean, it's been, as you say, it's been remarkable.
Well, 3 and 4 were in my sweet spot, being an NC State fan growing up as a kid. 5 and 6 will be spectacular as well.
Mm-hmm. And we move deeper into the league. And now you can see the timeline starting to develop here where you're going to see a lot of this going through the 90s. And then that leads us to kind of 9 and 10 that will then do pretty fast accelerated track of the last 15 years because there are a lot of different teams and a lot of different – once you get past Duke winning the 5 straight, right, and the 7 out of 8, then it kind of goes – you know, it takes some turns. Everybody gets a shot. Miami, Florida
well,
State.
Not everybody.
Well, not everybody.
Everybody with one particular school, not to be named.
Or the day it happens, by the way.
I will not be here.
Come on. Be a little optimistic.
I am completely. I could not be more accurate. I will probably not be here.
To see Clemson win the ACC basketball championship?
I meant this show.
Oh, okay.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Kiana Smith from Louisville will join us coming up in the Power Hour. And, man, the Cards are balling.
Yeah, no
they are
kidding.
Really playing well.
Yeah, we're going to find out what the secret sauce is for Jeff Wallace's team as they head down the stretch on the ladies' side. We're a couple of weeks away from being at Greensboro
yep.
on a Friday morning to bring Packer and Durham to the city. But before we do that, let's go back here to this discussion now. 7 teams projected for 5 spots. And we know we're a couple of weeks away from the tournament. Another 6 days behind that to the NCAA selections. But let's take those 7 teams here for the time being, right? And kind of look at how it sets up, Pack. You got 6 straight wins for Virginia Tech, and they clearly put themselves into a situation where Saturday afternoon against North Carolina is high stakes, really for both teams, but certainly for the Hokies.
For both teams.
They've played themselves back into the potential of a top four. Now, they got some work to do, but at 8-7 – you can make the case. So Virginia Tech North is where we're going here. All right.
Mm-hmm.
How about the wins and the losses and what remains when it comes to that circle of 7 teams? And what does it look like? All right. Well, here's a quick check. Head-to-head, Miami and Duke are 5-2 with 2 left. Then Notre Dame at 3-2. And then we get to the teams that have not posted winning records against the group.
I told you that earlier this week, I want to be Virginia. Not that I think they can win them, but mm-hmm. I just want the opportunities. And they get some absolutely beauts in terms of the quad one potential. So we'll see where this goes now. You can crystal ball it and try to figure it out yourself, but proceed with caution because every single night you watch these games just like that Duke Wake game last night. You thought the thing was over when they're down 19. Here come mm-hmm. the Deacs with a chance to win, Wes. It's going to be a wild race these last 3 weeks.
I want to call your attention to Wake Forest and Notre Dame. And Monday, we were very quick to tell you that they have manageable finishes in the ACC. And while that may still be true, it puts a double premium on Saturday's game in Winston-Salem.
It does, but here's the thing, though. Notre Dame is basically tied for first place.
That's correct.
Wake is not.
Mm-hmm.
Big difference. I mean, so when you say it's manageable, I would much rather be in a position like Notre Dame
than
I would Wake Forest. And here's the other thing. Wake loses the tiebreaker to Miami if in case it gets down to that since the Canes swept them. That's the other thing you got to play into all of this. Is there a situation where somebody could sweep somebody
mm-hmm.
who wins the head-to-head?
Right.
So there are endless possibilities of how this thing's going to look by the time we get to Brooklyn with that double bye and top 4 teams. So I think Duke's in a good spot. I think Notre Dame's in a good spot. And then from there, dice roll.
So we're talking about 5-for-2 in your mind?
No, I think the Hokies are playing so well that you can't discount that. But if they lose Saturday, I think you take them out of the mix.
Three of their last four on the road behind after Saturday.
I get that. But, I mean, they're in a – they put themselves in a must-win, have to go on a ridiculous streak. Remember, they were on that right side.
0-4.
Right. They're on that right side going, hey, right-siders have got to win in Brooklyn. So the only way you do that is to win out. They got a chance, but – it starts Saturday. That's going to be a humongous game. I cannot emphasize
how important that game is. You win six straight, it puts you in a lot of places.
Just like when you lose six straight, it puts you in a lot of places.
And
there's a number of teams that have fallen into that category, too.
That works. You have talked about Virginia a couple different times this week.
I think Tony Bennett is such a great coach, and they've got that DNA, and I don't think this is a vintage Virginia team.
Right.
But anybody that can go and win at Duke, you cannot discount down the stretch because they've got the you-know-what to win big games and make big shots. And I just have faith that Tony Bennett normally finds a way for his teams to stick their nose in your business, and they've got chances to really improve their resume big picture with a number of quad one opportunities.
Remember now, Cavaliers are ahead of the field a little bit when it comes to the total number. They have played 16 games. Only Virginia, Wake Forest, and NC State have played that number of conference games so far. So when you start thinking, their turns are fewer in the regular season. For Virginia, at Miami, Duke at home, Florida State at home, and at Louisville is the way their regular season finishes. So when you think of those teams, remember now, they're kind of through the balance of this. They've only got a four-game patch left.
You've also seen coaches, I think you can kind of read between the lines when you watch some of these games, how some were more important than others. I thought Tony Bennett's demeanor the other night in that Virginia Tech game.
He knew
how important that game was, not only for the in-state rivalry and all that stuff, which everybody gets into, but big picture. He knew, man, if we steal this one on the road, we are really in position ourselves to be in a good spot. That's why I think he was so adamant and demonstrative during the game, which was really kind of out of character for the way you normally see him during a game. And the crowd was great. Virginia Tech played out-of-sight defense. But he was kind of out of character. And again, I go back to that Steve Forbes soundbite that we had after the loss to Miami. I think Coach Forbes knew, man, that was a game we're just going to probably look back and go, woulda, coulda, shoulda. Up 13 at home, game you got to win. Let that thing get away. It really puts a lot of pressure on you moving forward.
Well, he's already got one win against Miami, has another chance for another win against Miami.
Who are you talking about?
Virginia.
Oh, Virginia, yes.
They've got the win against Miami at home. They play Miami again on Saturday, right, this time in Coral Gables.
Right.
They beat Duke on the Beekman jump shot. The Blue Devils come to Charlottesville. And then Florida State and Louisville. I mean, you talk about – this is kind of where they stand. And here are the top seven remaining. We told you about Virginia, Miami, and then Duke and Virginia. Virginia Tech's in there twice. Carolina's in there twice. Duke's in there twice. And these are all rematches, by the way.
It's go time, Wes. We've kind of weeded out who's in and who's out. I mean, who really is out unless you do something crazy dumb in Brooklyn.
We've had fun talking about, like, Skeeter Francis, and we got his colorful blazer here on set with us during the run-up to the tournament. There were times in the 70s and 80s, even into the 80s, where we had conference calls to determine seedings for the tournament.
Yeah.
And they were flipping coins on conference calls. That was comedy. We could be headed to a coin flip again this year, Pac.
Well, I mean, that double bye is important.
Yeah.
And that's one extra day that I don't have to play and put myself at risk. And it is huge advantage if you can be one of those four.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.